Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
I'd like to welcome you to our presentation. This is IATF Common Audit Report Application, or CARA, and remote auditing. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am a member of PJR's veto power review team. Now, our presentation today is going to cover, as the title would imply, two separate topics. We're going to begin with CARA. We're now in year four of using CARA, and it's a fairly well-known commodity, but we want to still outline how it works from the client perspective and what our expectations are. We'll then shift gears and talk about remote auditing or virtual auditing within the IATF world. And there's been some significant changes in this area that we want to share with you. So let's begin with CARA. Now, CARA, as indicated, stands for Common Audit Report Application. It was released in fall of 2020. And at the time it was issued, it was intended to try to provide some consistency in the completion and reporting of the IATF audits. And CARA, of course, is used for all of the audit types from the IATF. So whether it's a stage one audit or a revisit audit, whatever the case is, your audit report comes from the CARA format. Now, CARA, one of the things that we still hear from time to time from our clients is, I entered such and so into the CARA database. And it's very important that you understand that CARA is not a database. Maybe some of you on our call today, you've worked in the aerospace industry, you're familiar with OASIS. CARA is nothing like OASIS. It is a web browser-based audit reporting tool. And every single party that's involved in an IATF audit is going to interface with CARA in their own space, so to speak. And we're going to share with you how the data is exchanged between users, obviously the most important of these being between client and auditor. But understand that whatever you're doing in your CARA space, your auditor can't see that until you share that information with them in a particular way. So let's keep going. Now, at this point, there's probably almost no one on our presentation today that hasn't gone through an audit where CARA was used for the reporting technique. About the only thing from this slide that I want to continue to mention is that your auditors are permitted up to 15% of their on-site time for report writing. So that's obviously a significant portion of time, depending on how long your audit is going to be. Now, the big difference, especially if you're coming to IATF from, say, an ISO 9001 certification or perhaps a ISO 14001 certification, is in responding to the nonconformances. This is very unique in IATF, and CARA makes this process, I'll be real with you, it's a little bit complicated, but it is rooted in some requirements from the IATF itself. So let's go ahead and unpack what's going to happen if you have a nonconformance on an IATF audit and what's going to be expected of you. Okay. So The auditor prepares their nonconformances within the CARA application. And those are then given to you, most typically through email, but it's possible that it would be handed to you on a flash drive. Those nonconformances are going to be given to you on what is called a JSON, a J-S-O-N, JSON file. Now, your auditor, in most cases, they're going to give you a single JSON file. You can request, if you've got multiple nonconformances, you're allowed to request that you want individual JSON files for the individual nonconformances. You know, so in other words, if one of the nonconformances impacts your purchasing team and you want them to work on it, and another impacts your quality lab, so you want them to work on that one, that's fine. You just have to ask. Now the JSON file itself, if you try to open it anywhere other than CARA, you're gonna get an error message. JSON is, it's a very unique file extension, and to use it outside of the CARA system, it won't work. So as an example, I've got shown here, you're gonna get an email from the auditor, here's your nonconformities, and they'll be in the format of a JSON file. Now, the next step for you is to go to the CARA website. And I've got the URL here. It's nc-cara.itfglobaloversight.org. Now, once you're there, you'll click the button that says Load Report or Backup, and you will import the JSON file that the auditor gave you. And once that's been loaded, you'll be able to respond to the nonconformance or nonconformances by clicking on the edit icon. And I've got that highlighted here. It's on the far right. You can see it kind of looks like a pencil. You click on that and it will open the nonconformance for you to review and respond. Now, once you've opened it, the first thing you should do is read the nonconformance, obviously. You want to make sure that the statement of nonconformance, the evidence of nonconformance, the requirement, that all of these things make sense. If there's any part of that statement that isn't correct or what have you, you want to resolve that immediately with the auditor. And if there is a disagreement on the merits of the nonconformance, bear in mind, you can file a dispute, but only up to 15 days from the end of the audit. So you definitely want to open that JSON file, get a look at your nonconformances as soon as possible, so that if somewhere along the way you need to file a dispute, that you're doing so within the required time frame. Now, assuming that the nonconformances are understood, that you agree with them, you are then going to provide your response. And there are a number of fields within CARA. There's a lot of spaces for you to fill in information. The first of these is correction containment. Now, this is obviously putting out the fire, as it were. I think we're all familiar with what correction refers to. You do have to specify who's responsible. You do have to specify when the effort is completed. Now, the extent analysis piece of this is to be captured here as well. In other words, what efforts were taken for other similar issues, similar to the one that the auditor raised in their nonconformance. There's a space to record evidence of implementation. Now, this is kind of a place for you to capture a description of the evidence that you're providing. There's actually a separate spot on the form for you to attach the evidence, but this evidence of implementation box is for you to describe the evidence. And the intent is that you want to make it easy for the auditor to understand what you're providing. So this can refer to, you know, please see page 9 of 25 of the attachment XYZ, that sort of thing, that sort of commentary that makes it streamlined for us to do our evidence review and approve your correction. There is a separate evidence of implementation field that follows the corrective action portion of the CARA form. There are four separate boxes that pertain to root cause. The first of these is root cause analysis. This is the analysis, kind of the breakdown of what happened. So if you are doing a 5-Y cause analysis, or perhaps a fishbone, what have you, kind of the output, the work, if you will, is to be captured under root cause analysis. If there's a file associated with that, you can provide the file. Root cause result is the final established cause, the final determined systemic cause of the issue. And if there happens to be a specific file associated with that, there's a spot for that as well. Moving on then, we have the spaces for corrective action. Firstly, the space entitled systemic corrective action. As with correction, you do need to specify timing and who's responsible. There is a systemic corrective action files box. That is actually a duplicate field. You can disregard it. As mentioned earlier, there is an evidence of implementation space, again, for providing a description of the evidence that supports your corrective action. And then finally, we have the evidence of implementation files. And this is where you can drop all of your evidence that supports your response. Now, bear in mind that CARA will only accept PDF and JPEG files as direct attachments. Now, if there's other stuff that supports your response, you still need to provide that to your auditor. So any, you know, Word files, Excel files, etc. But in terms of things you can attach directly to CARA, it's only JPEGs and PDFs. Now, the final field that you are going to fill out in your CARA response pertains to verification of effective implementation. You need to fill in what did you do to verify that your efforts were fully deployed. Did you perform an internal audit? Did you have a specialized round of follow-up assessments, layered process assessments, what have you? What did you do to verify? And then if there's evidence that can be provided to support that that took place, we ask that you do so. Now, once you've inputted all of your required information, you're going to use the button marked Save NCs for Auditor. And I've got it up on screen here. And we recommend that you keep a copy of the JSON for yourself and to keep a copy of the printed report also using the Print Report button. That'll output a PDF that you can keep. Now, a word of caution about filling in your response. You want to make sure that you've provided all of the requested information. And the way to know if something's missing is to look for the red outlined boxes. I've got an example at the bottom of the screen here. When you're filling things in, if you see a red outlined box, that means that you didn't enter that information. And you definitely want to make sure that you've entered all of the required information the first time so that we're not kicking it back to you later simply because you failed to provide something. Now, when we conduct our review, we will either accept your response or we may reject the response. Now, if we reject the response, we are going to output an updated JSON file and send it right back to you. And it'll include the rejection commentary, similar to what I've got shown on the screen here. So If there is a rejection of your response, you will definitely know why it was rejected. Now, after it has been finalized and approved, you should expect to get a finalized JSON file showing the approval for your internal records. Now, some of our clients have asked us and even presumed to use their own format, their own corrective action format for recording their responses. Now, that is actually not permitted under the CARA system. You can definitely use your own process for developing your responses, but the official submittal of the responses is supposed to be done within CARA itself. Now, if you've got some need for some further insight on this, we've got a few resources we can share with you. Firstly, the IETF has actually developed a wiki page for CARA. I've provided the URL here if you want to take a screenshot of that. Additionally, we have two training videos that walk you through the basic steps of interfacing with CARA if you're going to be responding to a nonconformance. And again, if you want to grab a screenshot of that, then you can watch those videos. They're about 3.5 minutes each. Okay, let's put CARA aside and let's shift gears and talk about remote auditing under IETF. So, back in mid-2020, the IETF issued a document that was called the Global Waivers and Measures in Response to the Coronavirus Pandemic. And that document was known as the COVID Memo. And for 3 years, that document dictated policy on remote auditing. Well, last year in October, the COVID Memo was rescinded. It was taken away, and this was for a few reasons. Number one, because the pandemic was declared over by the CDC, and also because there's going to be some provisions for remote auditing in the new version of the IETF rules that's going to be coming out at the end of next month. So what this means for the time being is that if you have a remote audit request for IETF, it's going to require an approved waiver from the relevant oversight office. And here in the United States, that is the IAOB. So what does this mean? Well, if you have a remote audit request, first thing you need to do is contact your scheduler and explain the reasoning. You're going to be sent a form called the F108 ICT IETF. It's our IETF remote audit questionnaire. And it's intended to capture all of the requirements that were formally explained in the IETF COVID memo and that we fully expect to see in IETF Rule 6th edition. Among many other requirements, we are required to have a standard documented agreement between PJR and our client with regard to the remote audit. So the F108 ICT IETF provides a number of different fields. The very first field is, why do you want to have a remote audit or a partially remote audit? Is this because of a government travel restriction? Is it because it's solely an administrative type of audit that's going to be done, maybe a support location? Is it because someone on your team has tested positive for COVID-19? What are the circumstances? Now, the rest of the form falls under what we call eligibility. And we unpack a number of different things. We look at what is the software that you intend to use for this. Is it going to be Microsoft Teams? Skype for Business, what have you. What is your hardware setup? Do you have a cell phone with cameras? Do you have strong enough Wi-Fi? Do you have, are the all the various people that are going to be involved in the audit able to use these tools? Are your records electronic? In other words, you know, is some scanning is considered acceptable, but you have to understand that it can't be to the extent that it's detracting from the audit process. That's the big concern. Are you going to be manufacturing your product during the audit? You know, is there, and this was more if there was a COVID-based shutdown, but you know, we need to confirm that you're going to be running a business as usual during the portion of the audit that you intend to be virtual. Moving on to questions 5 through 10, we've got a series of questions intended to determine if we need to add time to your audit, specific to the fact that you're asking for it to be virtual. These questions at this point are a very limited relevance, but we have to ask, we're required to ask, have you been shut down recently as a result of COVID-19? And if you were, how long were you shut down? And what startup verification plans did you follow upon resuming your operations? What were the risks that you identified in resuming your operations? Were there any extraordinary measures that you had to take? Did you ever have to outsource your manufacturing? Did you have to make arrangements with sister plants or approved subcontractors or whatnot? What kind of resource challenges have you had as a result of the shutdown? Have you had to make any extraordinary changes to your day-to-day protocols? Again, these questions at this point are antiquated, but we are required to ask them. Question 11 is definitely not antiquated. This is very much relevant. Who is going to act as what we call the audit coordinator? Now, this is someone that, as the language from the COVID memo indicated, this person manages connections, availability of audittees, manages technical issues. And you know, ordinarily, this is going to be the party that who is acting as the guide during the audit and therefore subject to all the bylaws associated with an audit guide. But it's not just that you're guiding the auditor. It also means that you are able to work through the technical issues that come up in a remote interface. Another item that you are going to be asked to acquiesce to is what's called a technology test session. This actually comes from the IAF itself in mandatory document number 4, where it states that the review needs to include a check that the client and the assessment body have the necessary infrastructure to support the use of the ICT. So this check, as it's referred to in MD4, we call a technology test session. Now, the last part of the F108 ICT ITF asks you to provide a listing of who your automotive customers are and advise if they are operational. This is also kind of an antiquated concept at this point. We don't have a lot of companies that are shut down due to COVID, but again, we are required to ask. Now, there are two elements in this F108 ICT that I want to spend just a couple of extra minutes on to make sure we have emphasized their importance. Firstly, the audit coordinator. And again, I've already kind of made my point on this, but you can't overstate it. This is not just someone that is introducing the auditor to the interviewees. This is someone that is going to be able to handle the technical aspects of the remote interface and not interject themselves into the interviews. So they are there to facilitate the remote audit and to make sure that things are going smoothly. And also this technical technology test session, let's make sure that we understand the expectations here. This needs to include all of the areas associated with the audit. In other words, all the areas that are going to be included in the audit. So this might mean walking the entire production floor. This might mean going to all of the various offices. You know, wherever someone is going to be called upon to participate in the audit, the test session needs to reasonably account for those areas. So that means the test session is likely going to run for an hour to possibly 2 hours, depending on how complex your facility is. And it does need to take place outside of the actual audit event. It cannot be done and then 10 minutes later we're having our opening meeting, because if something goes wrong on the test session, we need to make sure that we can pivot and still hopefully have the audit take place on time. Now, if some part of the remote audit does not work, we have a couple of possible actions that we can take. We could potentially, if it's a surveillance assessment, we could add time to the next regularly scheduled audit. So if we lose a half day, 4 hours, we could potentially make a decision to move that time to the next audit. If it is a stage two or a recertification audit, in most cases, we are going to end up having to perform a supplemental assessment to make up the difference in lost audit time. Now, I want to assure everyone that we are a tenured provider of remote audits. We have at this point performed well in excess of 1,500 remote audits, including audits for ITF. Now, if you'd like to learn more about our remote audit process, I do encourage you to take a look at our webinar titled Virtual Audits in a Post-Pandemic World. In addition, we have a series of other webinars on topics like the interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit, and numerous webinars on things like ISO 9001, stage one assessments, etc. I mentioned earlier that Rule 6th edition is coming out shortly. We will definitely have a webinar put together for you on that topic as soon as possible. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the very best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for updates on new standards, new webinars, and other helpful points of information. Okay, well, wishing all of you a great day, and thank you so much.